Happy Taco Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday. Taco Tuesday.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
My number is 888-914-9149. I'd love to talk to you. Call me. 888-914-9149. Margaret in Chicago, we were talking before the break, and you were talking about what to do when the schism comes, what to do if the church, I think you said, when the church breaks in half.
And right, because, I mean, just the idea that the Pope put a pagan idol on the altar in St. Peter's, that broke my heart. I thought, you know, he put the Pachamama on the altar, and then the people, the Catholic, true Catholics, got mad, threw it in the Tiber, and he brought it back. I mean, that is so sacred, the altar, and he brought a pagan god into the altar of the Vatican.
Let's pause there for a second. I myself view the Pachamama figure, the bare-breasted indigenous woman with a baby in her belly, as incompatible with the Mass, among other things. And none other than Father Mitch Pacwa, who is a Jesuit himself, he pointed this out and said that this is, in his travels in South America, in the Amazon region, as a matter of fact, he had visited the place where this was, I'm trying to remember the specifics of how you described it, but how this was clearly not a representation of the Blessed Virgin Mary, but it was one of the fertility idols. Now, there's a controversy about this, Margaret. So what I want to say, number one, is I understand where you're coming from, and I understand why you would view it that way, because that's the way I view it. But I want to be fair, especially fair to His Holiness the Pope, and point out that there is a difference of opinion on that issue, and some people are arguing that that, in fact, can be considered a form of devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. I don't see it that way. I don't think it is, personally. But I'm also not the Pope. So with all due respect to the Holy Father, I would just simply say that he and others have said that they do not see that as any form of idolatry, but rather as a way of honoring the Blessed Virgin Mary. So I'm not going to litigate that with the Pope. It's not my place to do so. It's not my place to argue that point with him at all. I pray for the Pope, and I would encourage you to do the same thing. But to the anterior issue that you're bringing up here, has the church gone through situations where there have been grievous problems, including even at times, and I'm thinking back now, just going back in history, where there are times where you had popes who were problematic or who were even maybe caused problems for the church? And the answer is yes. And I say that with regard to these previous popes because I think there's an object lesson for you and for me. And that is that the church as established by Jesus Christ is indestructible. He promised it would be indestructible. So have there been bad popes in the past? Yes. Have there been great and saintly popes? Yes. Have there been mediocre popes who really haven't done a whole lot of good for the church, but they didn't do anything really bad? Yeah, we've had those popes too. And the church is still here. And the church will continue intact until the end of the world. Now, does that mean that maybe some people in the church might hive off into schism? Absolutely, it means that. And we've seen that happen before. This is why I'm offering you these thoughts here by way of trying to encourage you. The church was built by Jesus. Remember, he says, upon this rock, I will build my church. So he's the one who is building his church. He's the one who built it, if you prefer, in the past tense. But the point is, it was made for a crisis. The church was built for a crisis. The church is, in essence, Noah's Ark in the New Covenant. And Noah's Ark was built for a storm. It was not an easy place to be in. It stank to high heaven in Noah's Ark. And the passengers on that ark, at least the animal passengers, many of them wanted nothing more than to devour some of those other passengers. So imagine the stench on Noah's Ark. Imagine the commotion and the noise and the uproar, not to mention seasickness and everything that would bring, tossed by the waves for 40 days. I mean, come on. Who would want to be on that? I would. That's exactly where I'd want to be. In the flood of Noah, knowing what I know now, if I could go back to the time of Noah, I would absolutely get on board the ark with all the stench and messiness and commotion and all that other stuff, because the only alternative would be to go body surfing. And that, I'm afraid, it didn't work out for the people who went body surfing, which was everybody except for 8 people in total. So that's how I look at it, Margaret, and that's why I just want to encourage you, no matter how weird things get or how many just strange things that you see in the church, number one, don't forget, other things have happened before and very well may happen in the future. And number two, the church is still here. And so you don't need to go anywhere. And I'm saying this to you as a way to help you feel better about what's going on, not to agree with things that you see that seem weird, but to recognize that that's okay. This is all passing. It's all passing by. And as Jesus said, the wise man is the one who hears these words of mine. The wise man is the one who hears these words of mine and does them. He's like the man who builds his house on a rock. And when the rains fall and the floods come and the winds blow and beat against that house, it doesn't fall because it has been built solidly on the rock. And the rock, of course, that Jesus is building his church on is the same thing. So I offer you that by way of advice. It's the same advice that I try to pick myself. And I always remember Jesus saying, in the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. And that's pretty open-ended, all kinds of tribulation, even from your own fellow Catholics at times. And that's okay, because in the end, Jesus wins, and if you're with Jesus and you're in the church, you're going to be okay. I hope that's helpful, Margaret. I really do, and I'm glad you called today. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Darren in Texas. Hi, Darren.
Hi, Patrick. I've got a two-part question about baptism.
Okay.
And I mean, I know it should be a pretty straightforward question. You just take your baby and have him baptized and you're done, right? But what are the differences in all these different types of baptism? There was John the Baptist baptized with water, Jesus and his disciples baptized with the Spirit. There's Protestant baptisms. We had neighbors that went to Florida last week and had their kids baptized in the ocean. So that's the first part of my question is, what does all that mean?
Why don't we start there? Let's start there. Okay. So the first thing to remember is that there is only one baptism. So as it says in the Epistle to the Ephesians, there's one faith, one Lord, one baptism. Now, baptism that was the sacrament of baptism was established by Jesus when he himself was baptized. Prior to that, baptism was an ordinance. It was a symbol only. And so the baptism of John the Baptist was a baptism of repentance that was preparing the people for the coming of Jesus. So it was symbolic, and it symbolized people desiring to be free from their sins and desiring to be pleasing to God. And then when Jesus himself was baptized, he didn't need to be baptized, obviously, because he was sinless. But when he received baptism at the hands of John the Baptist, that's when he established the sacrament of baptism. And so from that point forward, it is a symbol, but it's more than a symbol because it actually accomplishes what it symbolizes. It actually regenerates the soul. So from that point forward, there is only baptism. There is only baptism, which you might say is owned and operated by the church that Jesus established, namely the Catholic Church. But what's interesting is that it is still valid if it is celebrated validly, if it's administered validly. It's valid whether or not it's administered by a Baptist minister or even an atheist doctor, let's say delivering a baby in a hospital and the baby's in distress and might die. And the doctor knows, well, the parents are Catholic and they want this baby baptized. And mom is saying, please baptize my baby. Even an atheist can baptize and it would be valid so long as he uses water and he pronounces the words, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and then pours the water over the head of the person, or it could be immersion. Then that's valid because it's the power of Jesus Christ working in the sacrament. So that is the one and only baptism that exists from the time of Christ forward. So did I cover the first question sufficiently, or is there more to it?
Yeah. Thank you. It's valid, but then the church has a sacrament of baptism. When they do it, you get, certificate of baptism, then you can be married in the Catholic Church. So What is the distinction there between what's valid and what the Catholic Church
Okay, does? So there's no distinction. And if you were to, let's say that you were, you and your wife were, well, no, let's take a difference there. Let's say that you're driving home from work and there's a car accident and you get out to see if you can help and there's a guy dying on the side of the road and you say, have you been baptized? He says, no. Would you like to be baptized? Yes, I would like to be baptized. And so you take water and you baptize him. Okay. There's no certificate. There's no white garment. There's no candle. There's no godparents. But that's a valid baptism. If you baptize him with the intention to baptize, and as you're pouring the water over his head, you're pronouncing the words, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. That's a valid baptism. That's a sacrament. And the church accepts that. Now, that's not the norm, obviously. The norm is, when you're a little bitty baby, your mom and dad bring you to the parish, and after 2 or 3 weeks after you're born, they have you baptized. Then you have the garment and the candle and the anointings with oil and such. But it's still the same thing. It's still the same sacrament. It's not more valid or less valid than if you were to baptize someone in an emergency situation. But it is the norm to do it that way. And that's the preference. If it can be done that way, do it that way. But in an extreme circumstance, you can baptize anybody who's in danger of death.
Okay. So that's somewhat comforting, because my second part of my question is, I've got two daughters. The first one we had baptized in the church. The second, my wife has kind of become hostile toward the Catholic Church, and we weren't able to do it through a priest, and I did it myself.
Okay.
You know, with holy water, saying, I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, on my second daughter. So it sounds like you're saying that's valid.
That is valid. So assuming it was water and assuming you said those words while you were pouring the water over her head, I assume you were pouring it over her head, right?
Well, I was making the sign of the cross with my thumb in the holy water.
Okay. Well, see, that there would be what's considered, there would be a question as to the validity of that. So you can have validity that is certain. You can have validity that's uncertain. You know, it's certain that it's not valid. Or you can have a question as to whether it's valid. And so in order for it to be certainly valid, the water must flow. Either if you're immersing the person, or you would be baptizing the person by pouring the water over the head. And so in other words, I know this may sound kind of crazy, but let's say it as long as we're at it. You can't validly baptize someone if you pour water over his foot, for example. The baptism is only valid if you're pouring the water over the head and then pronouncing the words. So maybe the thing to do, since there is some question there, you know, and the question would revolve around, well, how much water was on your thumb in making the sign of the cross? That's not, you know, that's not pouring. So there's a question there as to the validity. So what I would do is I would take your daughter to the local Catholic Church and have her baptized. How old is she now?
Well, now she's 14, so.
Would she be willing to be baptized?
That's a good question. You know, it's just that their teenage years, they're a little bit more protest, that kind of stuff, a little bit more rebellious. So, I mean, I'd love to. I just don't know if I could make it happen. And I had done this when she was maybe 2 years old.
Right. And you acted in good faith. You acted in good faith.
It's been a lingering question all these years, did it? Go ahead.
No, I just want to encourage you. You acted in good faith, and you did what you thought was best at the time. And, you know, it's possible that that would be a valid baptism. It would just depend upon, like, the amount of water. I mean, if your thumb was moist and you made the sign of the cross with a moist thumb, that's an invalid baptism. But if there's more water involved, and it could be reasonably said to have, you know, in some sense kind of flown or poured across her head, and even if just a small amount, then it very well could be valid. But I would start by asking her, you know, honey, I would love for you to be baptized, and I'll be happy to help you do that. And here's what that would mean. And would you like to do that? Obviously, she's at an age now where you can't baptize her against her will.
Right.
You can't force her to be baptized.
Well, I did meet with the priest and the, you know, CCD folks, and, you know, I thought, even at this age, that we could do just the baptism, like we could have a baptism ceremony. But they said, no, at this point, you'd have to go through a 2-year process of, you know, the education and receive all the sacraments, you know, first communion, confirmation, baptism, all of that together.
Yeah.
So that's more involved
I
than
wish,
just going to baptism.
Well, it doesn't need to be, though. This is the thing. The priest, the parish priest, has discretion, and I've always, I am not a fan of that sort of hidebound, institutionalized rigidity, saying that, nope, sorry, we've got to go through a 2-year program, and it's going to be every Wednesday night for 2 years. I mean, that's a real barrier for many people. Now, people do need to know. I mean, we're talking about adolescents and adults. People do need to be properly prepared to receive the sacrament. No question about that. I'm not disputing that fact. But if you give somebody a choice between coming here every Wednesday night for 2 years before we'll baptize you, or, you know what, come to my office once a week for the next 6 weeks, I'll give you instruction and then I'll baptize you. I mean, a million times over, you should do the latter, not the former, because it just creates a barrier for people, you know, and I hate to see that.
There are parishes where that could happen?
Yes, there are. Yeah, you can. Okay. So you're in Texas. You don't have to tell me where, but you could inquire to find out, you know, is it possible that, Father, that you could give my daughter instructions privately so that, I mean, I don't mean privately like the two of them are alone in a room together. What I mean is that she doesn't have to necessarily be in an RCIA program. The priest has discretion. Every single parish priest, pastor, let's say, has that discretion and could do that if he wanted to do that. They're not obligated to send people through the program if they see that it would be better for them to do something on a more fast-track basis. They can be properly prepared in a shorter period of time, and I think that's the pastorally wise thing to do in a situation like that, personally. But I'm not a priest, so I can only give you advice and encourage you to ask around. I hope that's helpful, Darren. I appreciate it very much. And you're a good dad. You're seeking after the spiritual welfare of your daughter. That's a great thing. So keep doing that. God bless you. Let's go to Frank now in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hi, Frank.
I just want to take a few minutes to thank you and Relevant Radio for bringing me back to the church.
Awesome.
About a year ago, I was just fiddling, trying to find a radio station. I drive a truck, and right now I'm in Kentucky. And I was going through the radio, trying a music station to listen to, and I found a Relevant radio station. And I didn't want to listen to it at first. I switched. I went to another one, and it came right back to a Relevant radio, another Relevant radio affiliate. And I don't know the name of the so-so. Well, okay, I'll listen to it for a while. And my life has never been the same since then. I've been a listener now over a year. I'm a monthly contributor to the radio station, and I'm more happy with myself than I've been in a long time. I went to my first first confession in over, got to be close to 40 years or so. I can't say that for sure because I don't know. And then Sunday, I went to communion. I can't explain feeling of almost like euphoria that I had after I received communion. It actually brought tears to my eyes.
Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah, Frank. What an unbelievably awesome story that is. Yeah, something's going on with your cell signal, Frank. Wouldn't you know it? I think old Hairy Legs doesn't like calls like this. Let's give it another try, Frank. Let's see if I can hear you.
Okay.
Are you there? There we go. Yeah, there we go.
Hello?
Yeah. Give me some more of this awesome story. So you were riding around in your automobile. You ran across Relevant Radio. You said, I'm not listening to that. And you switched to a different station, and what do you know? The different station turned out to be another Relevant Radio station. So you thought, okay, well, I guess I'll listen for a while.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to pull over to the side of the road here so I don't lose you anymore. I'm on a place I can park. I drive a truck, and I wasn't in my automobile. I was in my truck. I was headed down to Missouri and looking for a radio station, and that's how I came on to relevant radio. Because when I was switching, trying to find a station, it hit that one, and then I lost. I didn't lose it. I don't know if I want to listen to it. And at the very next one, it clicked. It went right back to the same one. So I started listening, and I've been listening ever since. And to the last caller who had been on, and his daughter hadn't been baptized, or wasn't sure if it was active. I and my wife are adopting two children, a brother and sister, 8 and 10 year old, and they have not been baptized either. They are going through catechism right now, but that's really good. Wouldn't be necessary. But in April, so during the Easter Vigil, they are going to be baptized. They're going to receive communion, confirmation, all that stuff, all at the same time.
That's beautiful, Frank. That is truly beautiful, and it's a miracle of God's grace, isn't it? The power of Catholic radio is incalculable. God bless you, Frank. Welcome home. Welcome back home after 40 years. Awesome. I'll be right back. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant
Radio.
Welcome
back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Okay, before we proceed with phone calls, I've got to share with you it's got to be the silliest thing that I've seen in the last week. But I've seen a lot of silly things in the last week. An environmental group called Population Matters has announced that they are presenting an award to Prince Harry and Meghan Markle for their decision. Can you guess what it is? They're going to give them an award because they made a decision to only have two children, the two children they have now. Yay. This is by Meghan Basham for the Daily Wire. The prince said in a 2009, not that prince, not the prince who's no longer here, Prince Harry. He said he would be called like the prince formerly known as the prince. Anyway, he said in a 2019 interview with British Vogue that was guest edited by Meghan Markle that they would only have two kids maximum, they said, because they believe the earth is borrowed. Explaining his decision, Harry added, because surely being as intelligent as we all are, or as evolved as we all are supposed to be, we should be able to leave something better behind for the next generation. Think about that for a minute. We should be able to leave something better behind by not leaving people behind. Anyway, this means that the couple who currently have a son, 2-year-old Archie, and a daughter, 1-month-old Lilbet, will not be having any more children. So Population Matters, they called this an enlightened decision, and they have dubbed the couple role models. The 30-year-old organization, whose aim is to create a wave of public awareness and corresponding policy action on overpopulation and unsustainable consumption, will also present the couple with approximately $695 as a gift to them at prize money that they can contribute to the charity of their choice. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But I must say, the more nonsense and foolishness that I see from this couple, I mean, with all due respect to the royal family, I mean, this must be extremely embarrassing to them with some of the nonsense that is coming out of these two people here. I can kind of see an upside here. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, God blesses couples with children, and every child is one way of God saying thumbs up to the human race continuing. So I'm all in favor of couples welcoming children as gifts given to them by God. And as God himself said, be fruitful and multiply. But there is a kind of upside to this in that, you know, with this kind of weird mindset that they've got, maybe in an odd sort of way, one upside would be that they won't be having that many children that they can indoctrinate with this kind of stuff. I feel bad for the two that they have. In choosing and publicly declaring their intention to limit their family to two, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are helping to ensure a better future for their children and providing a role model for other families. I have a feeling that the collective heads would explode at Population Matters if they met me. My wife and I have 11 children. 27 grandchildren, by the way. I don't think I'll be getting any awards anytime soon from Population Matters. But they say having a smaller family reduces our impact on the earth and provides a better chance for all our children, their children, and future generations to flourish on a healthy planet. We commend the Duke and Duchess for taking this enlightened decision and for affirming that a smaller family is also a happy family. Tell that to the Madrids. Tell that to Patrick and Nancy Madrid. We've got a super happy family. And as you know, we have more than just two.
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Thank you. On a separate section of its website, the Population Control Group argues that every human puts, quote, pressure on the natural world, consumes the Earth's finite resources, and contributes to climate change. It argues that one of the most effective ways to help our planet is having a smaller family. I wonder if they would have gotten... Yeah. Cyrus can't take it. I'm just used to this, Cyrus. I wonder if Harry and Meghan would have gotten a bigger money prize if they had decided to have no children. Maybe they might have upped it from 600... What is it? I just had it here. Maybe they would have upped the amount from $695 to something higher. Maybe they might have been able to get $1,000 out of this if they decided to have no children. So I won't belabor the point, but I will say this, that China has started to figure out in recent years that its disastrous one-child policy, based upon the junk science notion, the Malthusian worldview, that yes, this is a limited planet with finite resources, but this Malthusian worldview holds that there's just not enough space and not enough water and not enough food for all the people, and the more children you have, the worse it's going to get. And that's completely not true. That is, it has actually been disproven, not only since the time of Malthus several centuries ago, but also Paul Ehrlich's Population Time Bomb that he wrote in 1970 or thereabouts, in which he was predicting the imminent demise of the world because there were too many people and not enough resources. None of it's true. It's all turned out to be a farce. So China, a couple of years ago, they decided to backtrack on the one-child policy, and any couple that had more than one child, they would have forced abortions, etc. So they decided, you know what, this is a mistake. You can have two children now, they said, and now they've thrown the doors open wide, and they're now giving couples the opportunity to have three children. I doubt that's going to last very long.
Patrick, what's going to happen if they get a divorce and then one of them gets remarried and has another child? Are they going to have to give that money back?
They might have to give the money back. That's a very insightful question, Cyrus. But then it would be divided. So the $695 would be divided. So, I mean, like $245 a piece, $345 a piece. So it does get messy. And I hope they don't get divorced. I hope they live long, happy lives. I hope they live long, happy, productive lives.
I hope they have more children.
I do too. I think they should. And maybe Population Matters will demand its money back. But this whole thing, this whole silliness, reminds me of something that Saturday Night Live did back in, I think it was 1976. Do we have that audio, Cyrus?
Yes, standing by, Lorne Michaels.
Okay, so the silly group Population Matters offering Harry and Meghan $695 as a prize for deciding to only have two children kind of reminds me of this from Saturday Night Live. Shall we play it?
Hi, I'm Lorne Michaels, the producer of Saturday Night. Right now, we're being seen by approximately 22 million viewers. But please allow me, if I may, to address myself to four very special people. John, Paul, George, and Ringo, the Beatles. Lately, there have been a lot of rumors to the effect that the four of you might be getting back together. That would be great. In my book, the Beatles are the best thing that ever happened to music. It goes even deeper than that. You're not just a musical group, you're a part of us. We grew up with you. It's for this reason that I'm inviting you to come on our show. Now, we've heard and read a lot about personality and legal conflicts that might prevent you guys from reuniting. That's something which is none of my business. You guys will have to handle that. But it's also been said that no one has yet to come up with enough money to satisfy you. Well, if it's money you want, there's no problem here. The National Broadcasting Company has authorized me to offer you a certified check for $3,000. Here it is. As you can see, verifiably, it is a check made out to you, the Beatles, for $3,000. All you have to do is sing three Beatle tunes. She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. That's $1,000 right there. You know the words? It'll be easy. Like I said, this is made out, this check here is made out to the Beatles. You divide it any way you want. If you want to give Ringo less, that's up to you.
All right.
I'd rather not get involved.
All right.
I'm sincere about this.
All right.
If it helps you to reach the
You get the idea.
You get the idea. Yeah, you get the idea. So offering $695 to Prince Harry is like offering $3,000 to the Beatles. Anyway,
So you're saying it didn't work?
Well, I...
Sorry.
$695 is kind of an insult.
If the Beatles
had reunited on
SNL, we'd all know about it.
What's that now?
If the Beatles had reunited on SNL, we'd all know about
it. Oh, would we know about it? Would we know about it? But that didn't happen. Anyway, so I do pray for Harry and Meghan, and I do hope that they see their way clear to having more children, if God should bless them with more children. And this whole silly notion about overpopulation, not true. And I'll just leave it at that. But I doubt that that organization will give me any awards for living, for having 11 children. 888-914-914. You ought to check in with them, Cyrus. You know, what other awards are available? You know, maybe they have cash prizes for other things. We might try to participate in that if we can.
I have a feeling we're not eligible.
I have a feeling you're right. Especially now. I went and blew it now, didn't I?
Yep, there you
I've
go.
Ruined my chances
there
for a cash prize.
There goes that
$600. Yep. Yep. I'm out of the running. Let's go to Bob in Chicago. Hi, Bob. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that, group that gave an award to, Meghan Markle. It's not a new thing that people think the world is overcrowded. You know, I was in graduate school in 1977, and my wife and I, were expecting a child. And some of the other graduate students, had this opinion, why are you having more children? Don't you know the world is overpopulated?
Mm-hmm.
And, I just think it's something that has been promoted in some academic circles. And it's promoted by people who don't have hope.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm not sure if you heard me talking about this, but this has been a theory that's been abroad in the land for centuries, and it now that science has demonstrated that it's basically junk science, it's a shame that many people don't realize that. And books like The Population Bomb or Population Time Bomb, I think it was, it drummed into the minds of many people at the time that you were in grad school that there was a population explosion that could not keep pace with the resources, with the water and food, etc. And it's just not true. We do have imbalances and inequities in the area of maybe getting food to people in poor countries where there is deep corruption in the government and warlords who grab the food and they don't get to the people. We certainly have problems like that. There's no question about it. But in terms of the arable land available to us on this earth to grow food and the ability now to grow food without pests and other ways that we can maximize the growth of food, we have plenty of land and plenty of food for people, more than enough. In fact, there's a huge amount of waste that goes on. So I'm with you. It's a fable. It's a fairy tale.
Yeah, and instead of doing research and going into outer space, maybe we need to research and how to protect the environment so that we can produce more food.
Yeah, I'm a both and kind of guy. I mean, I really like the idea of going to Mars and the moon and other planets. There's a lot we can learn from that and other things that will accrue to us scientifically from those missions. But I don't think we should do so at the expense of feeding people. We should do everything we can to make the situation that we already have that much better, personally. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%. This is, I'll give you an example. When I was giving a lecture in sort of suburban Detroit, and I forget the name of the county that I was in, but I was speaking at a parish, and I brought up, because I had the factoid handy, I brought up the fact that if you were to take all the people in the world and put them together in the state of Texas, that you could fit everybody in the entire world into the state of Texas, and everybody would have, I forget what it was, like 1,000 square feet to stand on. And at the question and answer period, a gentleman rose, and he identified himself as a professor. I think he was a professor of statistics, if I'm not mistaken, at a local college. And I thought he was going to shoot me down. I thought, okay, well, you know, here's the expert who's going to tell me why I was wrong or something, or he was going to tell me that the math was wrong. And he says, no, he says, not only is that correct, he said, but I tell my students in my class, he said, you could take every single person on planet Earth and put them in this county, this one county in Michigan. And, you know, he listed how many miles by how many miles. He says you can put everybody on planet Earth in this one county and everybody would have like maybe 3 square feet to stand on, which would be uncomfortable. But he says this idea that the Earth is overcrowded, he says it's just nonsensical. And the audience, I thought, was even more appreciative of that point because he made it that much clearer about how, you know, so you could fit that many people in a situation like that. So that's something else to think about. Now, I have another story here, and I hope I'll be able to find it here briefly for you, but it has to do with a new nanofiber that is able to desalinate water. And as you know, there's quite a bit of water to drink on this planet, but a lot of it is salt water. So you're unable to drink it without it being desalinated. And so there's a new invention that has come to the fore that could, yeah, here we go. So let me just share this with you because it gets to the heart of this question about what about all the water that we need? The World Health Organization estimates that over 785 million people lack a clean source of drinking water. Even though 71% of the Earth's surface is covered by seawater, we cannot drink this water. Scientists around the globe have been working to find efficient ways to desalinate water cheaply. Now, a team of Korean scientists have found a way to do it in minutes. Fresh water needed for most human activities accounts for only 2.5% of the total water available on the planet. Let me say that to you again. Fresh water needed for most human activities. So we're talking about billions upon billions upon billions of people, showers, washing your hands, cooking, recreational use for water, etc. 2.5% of all the water on Earth is all that's necessary to account for human activities with water. So 97.5% of all the water on the Earth is not needed for this. So they say they have this new membrane that when it's wet, it will filter seawater. The membrane must remain dry for long periods of time. If the membrane becomes wet, the filtration process becomes ineffective. Researchers in Korea at the Korea Institute of Civil Engineering, they've developed a new membrane. The membrane is made of nanofibers that have been fabricated into a three-dimensional hierarchical structure. This was achieved by using a type of nanotechnology called electrospinning. The hydrophobic nature of the membrane is helpful because it's designed to not allow water molecules to pass. Instead, a temperature difference is applied on the two sides of the membrane that causes water from one end to evaporate into water vapor. The membrane allows water vapor to pass, which then condenses onto the cooler side, called membrane distillation. This is a commonly used method of desalination used in membranes. But now with this one, and we'll get a link to this for you if you want to read about it, this could easily revolutionize the way in which we can desalinate water on a massive scale and thus provide fresh, endless amounts of clean water to people who really need it. And this study was published in the Journal of Membrane Science. I've never subscribed to the Journal of Membrane Science, but it's in there if you want to check it out. I'll be right back with more right after this. You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday. It's you she's thinking of. And she told me what to say. She said she loved you. And you know that. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back. Let's go to Mark in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Patrick. I've been Catholic for a few years, and one thing that has always befuddled me is why cardinals are referred to as Joe Cardinal Smith instead of Cardinal Joe Smith.
Yeah.
Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, it's just a custom. I find it's a bit of a speed bump when I see that. It's neither here nor there. It's just a custom, and, you know, that's really all it is. It's not required to say that. I think saying, you know, Cardinal Robert Seurat to me makes more sense than saying Robert Cardinal Seurat. But it's just a custom.
Okay, so it sounds like you're with me on that.
I personally...
Powers to be on that? You and me together?
No. Yeah, you and me up against the machine, right? No, I don't think there's any need to do that. It's just a custom, and maybe in due time it'll go away. I don't know. It just seems a bit clunky to say it that way, but I'm not bothered by it. It's just, you know, I typically would refer to His Eminence Cardinal so-and-so as opposed to, you know, first name, cardinal, last name. That's all. It's just personal preference, I think.
I'll try to get accustomed to it then.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thanks, Pat.
If that's the worst problem we have in this life, then we're doing okay, Mark, right?
Exactly.
Right. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Pray for the Cardinals. And I don't mean the team. Let's go now to Maria in Yorktown, New York. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a new listener, and I really learned so much from you, and I really appreciate everything that you, the knowledge you share.
Thank you very much.
So my question is, I am interested in attending the traditional Latin Mass, but the closest one that I have near me is an SSPX parish, and I was curious to know, am I doing anything wrong by going there? Because I know there's some, you know, controversy with that, that I don't know if order is the right word for it. But, yeah, I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Yes, this is a topic I've talked about a few times on the show before. So if you want to go back and review some of the things I've discussed before, you can find it by doing a word search. If you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and then in the search bar, just put in SSPX, and you'll find those other times when I've discussed it. So for the moment, at least, I can say that I am I'm sympathetic to many of the sensibilities and concerns that people in the SSPX have. So I share some of those sensibilities and concerns. I like the traditional Latin Mass very much. I love it. I grew up with it. As a child, I served the traditional Latin Mass as an altar server, even though I was born in 1960. And so by the time the changes in the liturgy really took effect, I was already, you know, 6 years old or so. So I only have a childhood memory of the change that was made. But in my case, and I'm giving you this background, Maria, so you can understand better where I'm coming from. In my case, I was going to the Mission San Juan Capistrano Grammar School, which was connected to the Mission San Juan Capistrano Parish. And at the time, Pope Paul VI had granted an indult to pastors above a certain age so that they were not required to switch the parish sacraments over to the new order of the Mass. They were allowed to continue following the traditional form, but then when the pastor died or retired, then it had to switch. So the pastor who was there at the time, he lived to be quite old, and so that parish had the benefit of retaining the traditional Latin Mass and the other sacraments in the traditional form. So I just had the happy good luck, although it's God's providence, not luck, but I had the happy good luck of being in grammar school and being an altar boy at the traditional Latin Mass for years. So I grew up with it at a time when most of my peers did not have access to it. So I have great gratitude to the Lord for letting me experience a traditional Latin Mass and realize the beauty of something that for many people my age and younger, they've never seen before. So I say that to you because I am very sympathetic to those who love the traditional Mass. My wife and I, we attend a parish in Columbus, Ohio that doesn't offer the traditional Latin Mass, but when I have the opportunity, I try to go there. So I'm sympathetic to that. I'm also sympathetic to concerns that many people have in the SSPX about abuses and things that arose after the time of the Second Vatican Council. Often in the name or in the spirit of Vatican II, they were perpetrated, even though the Second Vatican Council didn't necessarily even envision or much less mention anything like that. So to the extent people were scandalized and bothered by the abuses that went on, I'm definitely empathetic and sympathetic to them. Where I get off the train, though, is when, as Archbishop Lefebvre did with impunity in 1988, he went forward with the consecration of four of his priests to be bishops against the express wishes of Pope John Paul II, who said, do not do that. And he did it anyway. So it was that obstinate defiance of the lawful authority that he was subject to that gave birth to the SSPX in the form that we know it today. And his action, Pope John Paul II called a schismatic action, and he himself was excommunicated, as were the four men who were consecrated as bishops. And that thrust the SSPX into this strange, anomalous situation where it was, you know, what was their status was the question for many years that went by, and people argued over that. And what I experienced, Maria, was in my interactions with people who were adherents of the SSPX, including any number of priests that I spoke to over the years, was this kind of toxic fury against the rest of the church, a disdain, it went beyond a disregard for, but a kind of an active disdain, an active I hate to say hatred, but sometimes it seemed to verge on that. Lots of animosity against the rest of the church. And I found that that was poisonous to trying to live out the gospel. I was never a member of the SSPX, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting I was. But I found that the attitude and the kind of condescension and et cetera, was just inimical with trying, for me at least, to try to live a Christian life. So it doesn't mean that I don't appreciate their love for the traditional Latin Mass. And it also doesn't mean that, at least in some ways, they're not in the church in such a way that you could receive communion there or you could go to Mass there. I think Father John Zulsdorf, a friend of mine, has done a great job of kind of elucidating all these details in an article that he wrote and I retweeted on the SSPX. I would encourage you to read that because he gets into these issues. You know, is it permissible to attend their Mass? Is it permissible to receive the sacrament of confession, for example? Is that valid? And I pointed out that Pope Francis himself granted the SSPX priests the faculty to validly hear confessions, and that has not been revoked, to my knowledge at least. So progress seems to be made, and I'm happy to see it. I would love to see an eventual reunion, if that's the right word for it, between the SSPX and the Catholic Church, or for their situation to be entirely regularized so that we can, you know, get back to being allies and friends again, if that's possible. But in the meantime, while that irregular situation remains, I personally do not encourage people to go in that direction. I think Father Z will give you a very even-handed and fair to the SSPX account of the circumstances in which you could do that. But personally speaking, I don't go in that direction. I'm hoping for a healing of this rift. I hope that's helpful, Maria. And if you want to find that article, in a couple of minutes, I'll retweet it on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. Thank you. Let's go to Sam now, listening in, where is Sam? Appleton. Hi, Appleton. Hello, Sam. Welcome. Maybe Sam's not ready. Let's go to Donna in Phoenix. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Patrick. I just don't think I can spit all this out. But anyway, I just wanted to offer a new suggestion for prize money. I think it should be 666.
How so?
Because
$666?
That's who it's coming from. No, 666, 666. Instead of 695, it should be 666.
Right, $666. Money. You're saying the price should be, right?
Yeah, I think it fits their agenda.
Okay, I get it.
And I just wanted to tell you that my son has 11 kids too, so I don't think we'd be welcome in their circles. I don't know how to say all of the stuff I need to say in that short of time. So I just want to tell you how much I love your station and you guys. But I disagree with so many things, and I have so many questions that I just keep calling.
Well, I'd love to sort that out with you. I really would. So how about this, Donna, since we're out of time for today, why don't you plan to give me a call tomorrow, and we'll get you on the air, and we can figure out where we agree and where we disagree and go from there. Thank you. My apologies to those who couldn't get on the air, but thank you for trying, and try again tomorrow. I'd love to talk to you. I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.
Happy Taco Tuesday.